Welcome to Hype, a very special episode. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by a very special guest this week. I have Alex Vlahos with me.
Hello.
Who you might know. Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Again. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm super good. Super good. Thank you for having me on.
Great. No, it's so good. We're so glad that you could be on. It's going to be really fun because obviously Alex, if you don't know, has a new show on that just premiered on BBC called Versailles. Which we're going to get into talking about a lot. I've seen the entire first season, so I'm good to go.
Hang on a minute. How have you seen the entire first season? Even my mum has seen the entire first season.
Well, I'm European, so I have my ways.
Oh, okay. The illegal ways you're talking about. I see.
No,
we can't do that on Hyperbook.
Never. No, of course.
I'll never admit that. Okay, cool. Great. So you've seen all 10 episodes.
Of course. I'm doing my research.
So you're informed, man. That's great. Yes. It's good to know.
I love how I'm like doing my research like it's a chore.
Yeah.
Like, I have to watch all 10 episodes.
I have to watch 10 episodes. And I have to watch them again as well because I have to do some more research. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
just
I know.
In case I miss anything, yeah.
I know your game.
But yeah, I mean, I think we should really just get into it and start talking about Versailles because it just premiered this Wednesday and you've been doing a lot of press.
Yeah, I've seen
on your Twitter feed. And how are you feeling? What's it like?
There's a range of emotions going on at the moment, because one of which is that I'm currently in Paris and we've just started filming the last block of season two. So we're on episode 8, 9, and 10 of Versailles season two. And the light is coming, the light at the end of the tunnel of filming is becoming brighter, let's say. Mm-hmm. So there's a sort of sense at the moment with that, with the cast and crew that, oh, you know, it's coming to its end. How sad, you know, again, you know, we're going to have to say goodbye to all these lovely people, all these lovely creatives. And then in doing so, in the last month or so, myself and George and other people of the cast have been doing a lot of press for season one.
Right.
Talking about episode one of the, which is, you know, the start of the journey. Of filming of Versailles and having to try and do some recollection of how that was, you know, what episode one was, what was it about, and, you know, and having to do all that. And then also there's that sort of thing about, we finished filming season one February of last year. So it's not only trying to remember what episode one of season one was like, but also trying to remember that feeling of what we were thinking about, you know, while filming a season like that. Because now there's this sense with me and the cast that, We know the show's a success, you know, in France and also in 134 countries worldwide. Everyone loves it. It just seems that the only countries that matter, not matter, that's a bad word, but you know what I mean. But the countries that matters for I guess for a British cast are the American audience and the UK audience. So it seems like they're the last two countries to sort of will be the last two countries to air it. The episode one went out on Wednesday to a plethora of, let's call it, mixed reviews. I mean, you're ranging from the one star Daily Fail to the five star Guardian. So you've got this sort of, you know, it's what do the British say? It's Marmite. You know, so but I don't think it is. I think a lot of reviews were written in that sense that I think the reviews were written before the episode came out. So I think a lot of people had already made their minds up about episode one. But we found out yesterday 1.8 million people watched it. We beat The People versus O.J. Simpson on that slot on BBC Two.
Wow. You
know, we started off with 2 million. I think we averaged 1.6. So the average audience for the whole time slot is 1.8, which is we beat BBC One for that time slot. So, you know, for the BBC Two's, you know, so the, you know, the ugly stepsister of BBC One, we've done really, really well. And the fan reaction has been overwhelmingly positive. So it's kind of a weird place at the moment. There's a sense of, I'm all over the shop, let's just say. That's an answer to your question. I'm all over the place.
Well, I was going to say, too, that I have sort of kept along because I saw you tweeted some stuff on Twitter about, oh, the reactions are bad. And I was like, oh, no, because I really liked it. So I was like, what's happening?
Well,
what show am I watching?
Do you know what? And I've since redacted my tweets because not that I'm ashamed of what I said, because I did come on set on Thursday morning feeling a little bit disheartened. But I realized that it's also kind of offensive to the creatives, the crew, the writers, that if an actor comes out and says, oh no, we didn't get good reviews, because the reviews aren't the be all and end all of the show.
Right.
And I got some words of beautiful words of encouragement from my girlfriend saying, hey, you need to start being a bit more positive. And she was, and she's right, 100%. I needed to be more positive. Myself and George needed to be a bit more positive because we're, you know, the leaders of the show. So it stems from us. We're the top of the pyramid. And if we're positive, then it leaks positivity to the rest of the company. And also, we're still doing a job. That's what's difficult about this, is that that's what I meant about my confusing sort of emotions, is that I'm still, you know, I still have to turn up on Thursday and film two scenes. You know, I'm still doing a job. I have got a job. I'm doing season two of this amazing show. So it's trying to get your head around that was tricky.
Of course.
But yeah, I redacted the tweets because positivity is good. And I realized when I tweeted them, I didn't do it in a sense of like, come on, everyone, pity me. But there was this sense of, you know, everyone came out in their masses on Twitter and social media to sort of say, hey, you know, don't listen to them. Not all the reviews are bad, and they were right. And some of the reviews have been excellent. And also, the show doesn't stand and fall on one episode. It's a 10-hour drama. And that's what it is. This is not short game drama. We're not a mini series. You know, we're not, say, something like London Spy. It's six episodes. We're not like that. This is a 10-hour long form drama. There are plots and things that we've started in episode one that carry all the way through to episode 10. And like you've seen, you know, it's a slow burner, some would say, and also a fast burner, you know, so it's, Versailles has everything. So
all kinds of burns, but I think you're right. And that's sort of, I mean, where I was going with it was just that, I mean, obviously when you do anything and you see someone going like, I don't like it, that's a bad thing. But overall, like you've said yourself, it has been very positive. Like, the audience, a lot of the reviews, but also the audience in general, has been extremely positive. I've seen so much good stuff
on social media
about it.
It's lovely. It really is. And, you know, it's weird because I sort of keep finding myself in shows where it creates fandoms. Why is that, Selena? Why do I keep finding myself in shows where, but I mean, I'm not complaining, because if a show has a fandom, then that means that the show has passionate and caring and creative people behind it, you know, on the other side of the camera, you know, the people that that tune in every Wednesday to watch the show. So I'm eternally grateful for the Versailles love that we're getting on Twitter and stuff like that, because it means that we are doing a really good job and the show is good, you know.
I was gonna say I think it does, like, you're on the right track with the passion there, because I do think there's a lot, like, when you've got this group of people, and I mean, obviously Versailles and Merlin, all they have in common is that they're set in a period of history in castles, but when you've got this group of people working really hard on something that they love, and you're sort of insulated in this bit, you're creating this world, you're in these costumes, you're in this amazing sort of historical period, and you're bringing those people to life, I think you attract that kind of fans that want to be in the world with you.
And they are the best fans. You know, I've come out publicly. No, I have recently. I kind of got pushed into the corner about wanting Merlin to come back. And I mean, I'd love to come back, but not to do the show, but to meet the guys again, you know? And I realized that when that article came out, I just suddenly all the people that they all came out of the shadows. And it was great to see, because I haven't had that sort of Merlin love since, what, maybe 3 years since the show finished, 4 years maybe. And I was like, whoa. And then I realized as well, kind of in the moment, that I haven't been on telly since Merlin. I've been off doing theatre and gallivanting about on stage and prancing about and doing Dorian and doing radio stuff. And I realized, like, oh, this is why I was so nervous on Wednesday, because I haven't been in a TV show at all, really, since Christmas Eve, you know, since that fateful episode. Let's not talk about that. We're not doing that.
Not over yet.
But it's still too soon. So it was, that's kind of why I was nervous on Wednesday. I was a bit like, oh god. And also, you put yourself out there as an actor for the positives and the negatives, and I think that's, again, going back to what I said about my redacting my tweets about being disheartened, was that I think I just need to get a bit tougher skin a little bit as well as an actor. I think I need to start just going, you know what, there are going to be people that aren't going to be as passionate and caring about the show that you are passionate and caring about, you know what I mean? So it's life lessons I'm learning, and positivity from now on. And I can't wait for people to see episode two and really episode three. I think that's when the show really kicks off, I think.
I agree. And, you know, I think it's a good way of putting it, because obviously it's easier said than done than say, I'm going to be positive from here on out, you know, only sunshine. But I do think, you know, you make a really good point. You've got that support remaining from Merlin. You've got those people in your corner. And I think, you know, that's one of the most amazing things. Like when you came out and said that thing about Merlin, like I think three different people tweeted me. And they were like, did you see? Because that community is still there and it's still so active and it's still so engaged. And it's not just about, oh, we want more Merlin. It's also about, look at these great people that we're fans of still being interested in what we're interested in.
Yeah, and I think things. That's what, I mean, I joked about, you know, saying that, you know, Merlin's going to be one of these jobs that follows me to my grave. But
probably is.
But, I kind of look forward to it. I kind of look forward to coming out stage door as a 56-year-old actor and signing a picture of me as a young Mordred. You know, I think that's kind of something I'm like kind of wistful about. I'm like, that's kind of romantic in a weird way. But these fans that, you know, they're lovely, they care, they're passionate, they're devoted, undevoted love towards your career. And and also, you know, by even me doing that article, like, you know, I start talking to Owen on Twitter. You know, we talk in text all the time, but that sort of out there talking, you know, in front of the public eye is kind of fun, because you just remind the audience, you know, that we still love each other as a company as well as a company of actors, you know.
Yeah, of course. And it's all part of the fandom. It's all part of what I think people enjoy.
Yeah, 100%.
But I was going back a little bit to you sort of saying, you know, you're putting yourself out there when you are an actor, and especially in a show like Versailles. I mean, I think one of the things about Versailles that I sort of was a little bit taken aback by in a good way is how just completely raw it is. Like, I know you probably, people ask you about like the sex a lot and stuff, but I want to like ask you a little bit more about like your character and like the way the show sort of sets up these extremely just raw and crazy dynamics that just grip you. You know, I think it's so intense.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is one of the first things that struck me about, you know, as an actor, you get put through, you get sent a character breakdown of a character that you're going up for to audition. You don't have any scripts or sort, and I turned up and I had a speech to audition for, and it was a speech that is the speech in episode 2 where he's dressed. I mean, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, but it's the speech when I'm in the dress and I'm talking to Louis about, I've been dressed like this since I was 3 months old, and that was the speech. That's the only context I had, and I thought, even then, that one little page of dialogue that I had to go off for my audition was extremely brave and raw and gripping, as you said. Yeah. And it sucked me straight into this character. And then when I got the part, and you start learning about the dynamics between this sort of crazy dysfunctional family, this, you know, this almost dictatorish leadership by Louis, who was only a 28-year-old at the time, you know, and this 26-year-old homosexual younger brother who loves wearing women's clothes but also is a fearsome warrior. You're thinking, they're making this up. And, you know, and then also, but then it portrays on screen as well, you know, and it is raw. I mean, it is intense. It's one of the most, Philippe has been one of the most emotionally, physically draining roles I've ever had, because it takes a lot out of you being this guy, because he is almost quadriphenic in personality. He's almost he's almost bipolar, I think, in some respect, or, you know, and schizophrenic in that weird sort of dichotomy of switching between being wanting to be a woman but also wanting to be a fighter, wanting to be gay but also having to love his wife. And this is just it's all over the shop as far as a sort of continuity for a character perspective. but it was intense to film. You know, you work long hours and you know, you're trying to make this person. Who is it? You know, and we have to reiterate now as well, is that we're not talking about something that David and Simon, the showrunners, just created off the top of their heads. This is a real person.
Right.
You know, and also, it's also the thing I'd like to reiterate is that, you know, Versailles might get a bit of slack at the moment for the premise of the show, but, and being compared to things like being compared to Game of Thrones or being compared to, say, Wolf Hall, because it's a BBC show. Mm-hmm. But we have to remember, Versailles is not, you know, we're not. Versailles hasn't been a show that hasn't been created off a best-selling novel. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's quite important. You know, Versailles is history.
Yeah,
we're fictionalizing history, but it's not going off a best-selling book like Bring Up the Bodies and Wolf Hall from Hilary Mantel, who was on, you know, number one time best-selling list. This is a show that's been created off history, you know, and you have a duty as an actor and as a creative team to represent these people that actually existed on camera. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I can imagine, because, and that's another thing about this premise of the show and the quote unquote nakedness in general of the thing is that it's capturing this extremely interesting just time period where everything was sort of in conflict with each other. It was beautiful and decadent, but it was extremely constraining and
seedy, and also as well, you know, mm-hmm. and kind of very vulgar. But you know, we also have to remember as well that the French are very liberty. You know, they mm-hmm. they're very carefree even back then. I think that the idea that, you know, we're as a Brit, we're very conservative. You know, we're very, and also the BBC are very conservative. So I think we're getting a lot of press because, oh God, that's, you know, this,
it's so scandalous,
But sex. Let's try and like just rub our eyes and you know, squeak out our ears for a little bit and just think, like, you know, sex is a currency in this mm-hmm. time. Sex is probably more important than money, than wealth. It is vital at court. And if we didn't show sex, and if you knew the history books and knew that Louis had five mistresses or four mistresses and, you know, was going to women like, you know, like salt, just literally like, like, and if we didn't show that, then we would get criticized. So we show it and then we get criticized. So it's like, pick and choose, you know, people are coming out saying, you know, it's porn in cravats. And it's kind of like, God, no, because if you just let that one 30-second clip slide, there is 52 minutes of drama. On that, that's surrounding it, you know, that's enveloping that little sex scene that you've just seen, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just one of many flavors that we have, you know, in the show. And it's I'm hoping that people just start carrying on and tuning in for the right reasons now.
I'm sure that, like, it's not even a question for me, because I feel like obviously the first episode there were a couple of scenes, but as you get further into the show, you begin to realize, yeah, this is a part of a bigger story, and this is very much like an expression of power. Like, you withhold sex, you have sex, like, it's all part of the power play.
100%. And also, you know, and also episode one, I know you've seen the series, episode mm-hmm. one and two were written as a 2-hour pilot. Mm-hmm. And when the show went out in France, they were shown in episodes in couplets, they were shown in twos. And I think episode one fares better when it has episode two to follow straight after. So I'm hoping that people, when people watch episode two, that they see that the, you know, there's things that are set up in episode one that has a payoff in episode two. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And, yeah, I just think that it's, and also, you know, when people write a pilot, when any person writes a pilot, when Dave and Simon sat down to write this pilot, they threw everything at it.
Yeah.
Because it's them pitching to get a job, fundamentally. Do you know what I mean? You want to show Canal Plus and Capodrama, the people that produced this in France, as writers, you want to show them that.
You want to show them everything.
You want to show them everything. Mm. You go, this is what our story, this is what mine and Dave, this is what, say, mine and David or mine and Simon's show is going to be about. We're going to have this, and we're going to have this, and we're going to have the brother dressing up as a girl. We're going to have all this sort of stuff. And they throw everything at episode one and two. And then the show then breathes. From 3 to 10, it breathes. It pushes these beats, these story beats out. And I think it's compelling drama.
I think so too. And you know, another thing that is sort of so freeing about the type of show that you've created and that you've built, and you very much see that over the course of the 10 episodes, is, you know, on one hand, you have all of these intrigues, and on the other hand, you have this woman who becomes a doctor, and you know, on one hand, you have all these, like, men must adhere to certain values, and on the other hand, we have you and your character and your relationship with the Chevalier, which is just so, what I love about it too is that it's just there. Like, obviously this is a time when homosexuality wasn't necessarily mainstream accepted, but at this court, because of this king, you're just gonna be, or Philip, sorry, it's just gonna be allowed to do this. And it's not the conflict of the story. His sexuality, his relationship with his Chevalier, the sexuality of it is not the conflict.
No, it's not at all. I mean, the conflict comes from the Chevalier as a character whispering, you know, and changing Philippe's viewpoints on his brother. And, you know, also, like you said, it's not the main point, that the sexuality, the fact that they're gay, is not. And also, mm-hmm. I think we genuinely represent the best relationship on screen.
I think you do too. I was going to say the same thing. Like, none of the relationship are, like, super healthy. But, you know, at least Philippe and Chevalier aren't trying to kill each other.
No, they're not. But also, they show great amounts of affection
they
towards each other.
They care about each other.
100%.
Yeah.
Deep down, there's utter true love there. And we were very... It's one of the things that I've been most proud of in this show is that relationship that I have, you know. And me and Evan Williams, who plays the Chevalier, worked very hard at finding the light and shade within how much, you know, the sex is important, and how much I've done just sitting in front of a fireplace is important, and holding hands is important, you know. There's light and shade within a relationship that you can show, and you know, and Louis has a lot of relationships and a lot of women, and you have to understand it's not about the degradation of women, or it's about the currency and about what he needs to fulfill himself as being a true king, and he needs Marie Therese for the politics, for Spain, you know. And he's in love with Henriette, you know, played by Noemi, because that's what they were brought up. They were childhood sweethearts. And then you've got Madame de Montespan, who is the most manipulative, cunning, smartest woman in court. So they're all different facets of showing power and intrigue and relationship, you know.
It's just great. I love that kind of understated representation, you know, especially nowadays when you have so much mainstream talk about, oh, you know, we need representation everywhere. Like, here comes Versailles and just does it so casually. I love that.
It kind of does. But then again, this is what, you know, this is kind of frustrating about the publicity of the show, or the pre-publicity, I guess, or post, is that, you know, they're focusing on the raciness of it, and we should be championing that we're showing LGBT characters, we're showing women in strong, powerful situations, you know, we're showing men in strong, powerful situations, you know. Like I said, there's many flavors to the show that we should be focusing our energy on. Are you listening, yes. Daily Mail? Come on.
Well, Hypable will run an article about that, I promise that.
Okay.
I want to ask you something else too, which is a little bit different but kind of the same, which is
sure.
the clothes.
Yeah.
Because this just struck, that's one of the things that struck me. This might be like the only show on TV where the men's clothes are more interesting than the women's clothes.
They are. The men's,
like,
clothes
it's
are far
so
more
amazing.
I know. We stand around, you know, like waiting to go on set, and then we're all standing there, all the girls are sort of complaining about, you know, how tight their corsets are and, you know, and how much their shoes hurt. And then we look down and we're like, my heels are bigger than yours. Yeah. I don't know why you're complaining. But it's, beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, obviously, George gets some amazing costumes as the king, and quite rightly, as he should. But yeah, I kind of lucked out as well. You know, I get to have the whole plethora. But it's as an actor, it's a gift, because it's a very, 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 very quick way of getting into character. And the wig and the heels and the five layers. You know, you've got a shirt, you've got a waistcoat, you've got a doublet, you've got sleeves, you've got the coat on top. There's, like, you know, there's many layers for the costume, but it's you can't help but not think that you're in 17th century France, you know. It's impossible not to. And you walk onto these beautiful sets that we've got, or go to these filming these beautiful locations around France, and you know, you walk on tiles that Louis himself walked on, and you think, well, that, you know, that's not hard as an actor to find that make-belief point in your head, you know.
Yeah.
Like filming on a horse in Caerphilly, pretending it to be Camelot, on the other hand. That's
hey,
quite,
now.
No,
that was all real.
That was not all real. That was not Caerphilly. No, but you know, do you know what I mean? You know, there's a lot more work to go on when you're doing something with Merlin to try and find that truth. But with Versailles, you're very lucky that the costumes and the locations give you that truth at 50%, and there's not much of a battle then, you know. It's a very quick fire way of waking up at, you know, 5 a.m. in the morning and getting a car in and just filming and thinking that wasn't very hard to find Philippe.
Yeah. And there's that's another, like, the contrast between those elaborate costumes and the palace, like the decadence of that. And then you go outside and it's just stark. Like, there's a lot of gray sky and dark green woods and just that openness of nature that sort of, it all brings it together. I'm very impressed with the cinematography.
The cinematography is exceptional. And also, you know, it's any show like this will try and glamorize the precinct, you know, as Versailles is. Versailles works as a precinct, like as a CSI sort of thing. It's you know, it's the center of all of our act. The show is called Versailles. It's like another character in itself.
CSI Versailles.
CSI Versailles, exactly. But the outside, you know, it's a swamp land. That's what Louis did. He upended Paris as the capital of France, and he moved it to the swamp land. It's like, it's as crazy as, say, Obama turning around right now and saying, I'm moving the White House to Florida.
Yeah.
We're in that ballpark of thinking, you know, bloody hell, that's bonkers, you know. But not just nice Florida, we're talking about swampland Florida.
Okay.
We're not talking about Miami, we're talking about...
Right.
Like, but it's that, you know, and so that's what's great about the interiors being so rich, so full of different textures, wallpapers. And then the outside being quite stark, the gardens not being quite finished, the scaffolding being outside as a constant reminder of Louis's sort of mental battle with the nobles and his mental battle with creating this palace, you know.
So how is the future of the series looking for you? What do you know anything beyond season two? Or are you kind of setting that up to be a contained thing?
How much can I tell you? So obviously you know how season one ends, and it ends in heartache.
Trying not to cry.
But yes, yeah. I mean that's what, you know. I'm so proud of that episode 10 because it's so good, done beautifully, done.
Yeah.
All the threads come to its conclusion, but three or four maybe are left kind of dangling, which is great, which sets up season two. And with season two, we pick up 6-7 months after season one, so there's a bit of time between, and again with season two we span a couple of years of history. There's you know, season two is focusing on the affairs of the poisons, so that's our arc for season two. And I'm sure there's going to be a season three. There's talks already about it, you know. We've got the studios in Brissaman, where we film the interiors. We've got them booked until 2018, I think. So I think we're quietly confident as a cast and as a company of actors and as a company of production crew that we're going to be able to tell another year's worth of stories, which is great. We're just waiting for the green light from Canal Plus, really, which I'm assumed, I've been told that it's going to be in the next couple of weeks before we finish filming season two. And that's what's great about this show as well, is that France have never done this, Canal Plus have never done this, but they greenlit season two before season one had even aired in France,
right?
And they're potentially going to greenlight season three without us actually completing filming on season two. So the confidence that's coming from Canal Plus, from France, about this show is amazing. It's so overwhelming, you know.
And also
as an actor, you know, you're constantly out of work, so the idea that you're guaranteed work is like a saving grace. It's hallelujah, you know, in
of
the
course.
Moment. And it's lovely. And I bemoan, you know, sometimes about, you know, Philippe and stuff like that, but it's been an absolute joy of a part, absolute yeah. joy. And what a gift for, you know, at the time 26, and I'm 27, I'm going to be 28 in July, this of an actor to I would never have got this. It's so bonkers, it's so out there, that and it's a challenge, and that's what you want as an actor. You want to wake up every morning and be challenged artistically.
Of course. And that role definitely does that, I think.
It definitely
does,
yes.
In so many ways.
What did you... Can I flip some questions back at you? Did you binge it? That's my first question.
I did binge it, and you know what?
I didn't mean to, but I think... I think this is a discussion. I was on BBC Breakfast this morning with George, and I was talking to him on the train on the way back about people's attitude and people's routines about how they watch television now has changed from how television is still being made. And Netflix have got onto it, I mean, because they've created that binge-watching mentality. But yeah. I think Versailles suits that.
I agree.
It suits... And because we don't do the cliff, I mean, we did a cliffhanger in episode one, but it's not really a cliffhanger. It's more of a, like, an EastEnders dun 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 moment. But I think episode one and two, like I said earlier, are a pair. But episode three and four aren't a pair. Episode five and six aren't a pair. They're very much standalone episodes without any real fallback from, you know, there's through lines, but there's no sense of, like, urgency to, oh God, I wonder what's going to happen next week, because they're all standalone episodes. But it entices viewers and it encourages viewers to just watch 10 hours of drama. It's like kind of one big 10-hour film, if that makes any sense.
It is. Yeah. It is, yeah. And it's something to do with, I think, just, first of all, the whole being in the world thing. Like, every time an episode ended, I was like, okay, I got to go do something else. And my mind just had that image of Versailles with the forest. And I was like, maybe just one more. but also just, I think, because it is, at the end of the day, like, a character thing. Like, what kept me coming back was like, okay, but what's gonna happen to Henriette or Philippe or I can't remember the character name, the female doctor.
Claudine,
she's my favorite.
Of course she is. She's our favorite as well,
I yeah
think. And I don't think Lizzie Brashaw knows it, but I think everyone champions her on set. We're like, well, you're our favourite.
Exactly.
Claudine and Jacques, the gardener, is our favourite. Mm-hmm. We love the gardener.
He's awesome too. Yeah, I was awesome. So worried he was going to turn out to be... Oh, anyway, sorry. but no, and they kept being new characters introduced too.
Yeah.
And at first, like, this is one thing I'm going to have to admit, it was really hard for me to tell people apart because of the wigs.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
I
think it's always, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. Mm. But also I think it's very hard at the moment to sort of remember what it's like to watch the first episode of a series.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's very hard to remember what that, you know, your first time watching Downton. Yeah. I think it's very hard to remember probably your first time watching Merlin, your very first episode. I think these questions that people like...
I hated Merlin at first because I was like, that's not Merlin, he's not old, like I remember.
But then see, and then the show grows on you. And I think that's my argument, is that people have, like, that's come out in the reviews or some people on Twitter or whatever have said, like, God, I can't tell who and who for part. But it's like... Well, then,
that's just the first episode.
That's just your first episode.
Yeah.
That's just 52. You just watched 52 minutes of drama. And you're expecting to get everything? Come on, you know.
Exactly.
We're not taking you for granted. You don't take us for granted, you know. You don't pick up a book, read the first chapter, go, I have no idea what's going on, and then put the book down, do you? Because that's insane. Mm. But I think we're very quick to judge in television. I think we're quick to go, well, nope, it wasn't for me. Sorry, I lasted half an hour. And it's like, well, no, come on, you know, go watch episode two. And I bet you I could pause it halfway through and you go, okay, so who's Philippe and who's Louis? And you'd be able to tell by then because your brain has learned. It's this crazy thing that happens.
We learn stuff.
We learn
it's
stuff.
It's amazing.
Man. It's amazing, right? So I just think that it's, I just didn't give it time, you know. But it's good that you admitted that because I think it's good for us to hear.
Just because, again, it's a lot of actors I don't know. I obviously knew you. I didn't know anyone else. But not that well. So I was like, okay, well, I gave it a couple of episodes and then I could tell them apart and then it was all fine. And I knew who was in whose corner and all that stuff. So, and then it got so interesting because then you started caring about everybody.
That's when it pulls you in.
Exactly. And that's when I was like, well, I have to know. I have to know, you know, what's going to happen and what these people are going to do to each other. And you never know. Like, even though you start knowing people, there's always that sense that at any time someone could make an alliance. Kind of like what happens without too many spoilers, but like, you know, like someone is pulled into something, someone is pulled out of something, someone betrays someone else. There's always that. And that was probably what it was like in a lot of ways.
It's so political, so politically driven, so convoluted, so intertwined. It's kind of, you know, it's like a poison ivy web, you know, it's political intrigue at its best. You know, people who describe this show as a costume drama, but it's kind of like, well that's easy because, you know, you're putting it in a box because that's easy for us, our brains, to comprehend. Oh, it's a costume drama. But it's like, this is like House of Cards stuff.
Yeah.
You know, this is political intrigue at the highest level. Just because it's set in the 17th century doesn't mean you should be able to work out that, you know, Louis is trying to fight tax avoidance. What's happening in the UK at the moment is people talking about tax avoidance. It's like we couldn't be mirroring, if we planned it miraculously, which we didn't. But, you know, society mirrors itself and goes on loop over and over again. So no, it's I don't know where I was going with that. That's my train of thought's lost. But yeah, but that idea of the political intrigue is you know, and it's what you said earlier, which is great, which is that it's a character-driven show.
Yeah, it really is,
You know, the overarching theme is just the slow progression build of Versailles in the background. Just every episode there's a little bit more getting added. You know, that's your sort of main sort of visual arc. But the sort of the context of the script, the storytelling, is about the characters. Everything comes from the characters. Nothing we, you know, we're not Game of Thrones. There's not, you know, there is a big war that happens in episode 4 and 5, but we show glimmers of it. It's about the reaction of what happens when people come back from war. Mm. That's the story. It's not about showing the, you know, the sword wielding and the horse jumping and the cannons going off. We show it, but that's not where the story is. That's just like a 10-second flash clip. It's about what happens when people come back from war, the repercussions of that, and that's where you mean about it being character driven.
Yeah, exactly. That's absolutely right. I love how you compare it to House of Cards, because I hadn't drawn that connection, but that's actually a pretty good connection, yeah, I think.
Just, you know, the sort of the layers, the doubling up, the sneakiness, the deception, you know, it has all of that sort of in it, I think, 100%. Mm.
So I don't want to keep you for too long, but I do just want to ask, first of all, like, are you up to anything else professionally other than Versailles? Is that kind of your life right now?
I love that you asked that question, because I can't even see beyond my next day's script at the moment. I mean, we are so in the thick of it. The last 2 weeks we've been doing double banking. So we've just finished working with an amazing director called Mike Barker. He did The Tunnel, he's done Broadchurch, we've got an English director, which is so rare to have on our Versailles, because last year we had two French directors, a Canadian director. French-Canadian director
on the gym.
I speak film French now. I could not walk into a boulangerie and ask for a patisserie, but I know what my mark is, and I know what a boom operator is in French. So I'm learning backwards. I'm learning on the job, which is not necessarily helpful in France in general.
That's super interesting, though.
But we had an English director just finish off the second block, which is episode 5, 6, and 7. Mike Barker, brilliant director, and we've just started with a Canadian director called Louis Choquette, mm-hmm. and who is doing the last three. But we did double banking for the last 2 weeks, so literally this is what our lives have been like. I've been filming in one part of the studio, and George has been filming in the other part, which I'd cut. And we would literally run from different sets and carry on filming. Sometimes I would film without him being there, and he would then replace me and film the other scene. Like that's how mental my life is at the moment. Nothing really coming up as far. I mean, I'm the minute this show finishes, I'm going on holiday for a little bit, as I tend to do, and then back into the thick of it. Really, there's projects always on the go. I've got a really exciting project with Scott Hancock. We're rejoining forces in the Big Finish mold, and we're gonna be recording a very special thing that I've had in the works with Scott for a while now at the end of this year. So that's pretty much it, really, because Dorian's obviously done and dusted now. We're waiting for that to come out.
Yeah, you're done with that now, right? Like,
series 5 is going to come out in October, November, and they're 4 1-hours. Brilliant, and this is the perfect send-off for Dorian. But it's not the end for me and Big Finish. It's not the end of me and Scott working together. It's just nice to. It's finally nice to just have 5 series, really good series of Dorian, and call it a day while it's still good, you know. Mm-hmm. And then we've got something very exciting coming up, so I start recording that with him in towards the end of this year, in December time. So yeah, that's pretty much it at the moment.
Oh, fun. But that's enough. Yeah. That's good. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm more looking forward to the holiday, if I'm honest with you.
Well, you also need that. But yeah, to have a show that you're so proud of, and that you clearly care so much about, and that a story you want to tell, and that's being told in such an amazing way, I think is pretty great. Like, it sounds really good. At least.
Yeah, it is, and like, you know, you've seen the series. It's a cliche, and there's a reason why it's a cliche. It's because cliches are true. Is that, you know, the show kicks on from here, and it does get better. It really does. And I think by episode 3, I think I've talked to a lot of people, but they say episode 3 is the moment where they were hooked. That was it then. No turning back then. So, you know, and it's perseverance, isn't it? So that's what the word is.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
As they say in France, you know, perseverance. Yes,
perseverance, exactement. Where's ça? So yeah, see, I do know a little bit. That was me showing off. It's exciting times, and it's kind of a relief. Just glad that the show's out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And now you can sort of let it run its course,
you know,
and see. Yeah. I want to finish off by asking you as well, just to sort of round down the discussion a little bit, because we usually on Hype, we obviously talk about a bunch of different fandoms and we cover news and all that stuff. But I want to know, because we have this segment called How We Hype.
Okay.
And I want to know how you hype, which means maybe you don't hype so much at the moment because you're too busy, you know, Versailles-ing over there. But what is catching your attention in fandom right now? What are you a fan of?
What am I a fan of at the moment? Wow, that is. What am I a fan of at the moment?
There's a little show called Versailles that I really like.
There's a show called Versailles. No, I can't hype my own hype. That's like a hype paradox. You know me. Come on, it's like that's a silly question. It's like I'm probably front and center as the sort of out there actor to be hyping Doctor Who.
Mm.
You know, I will plug it till the dying day.
Yeah, you are like the Doctor Who super fan.
I am, I'm not ashamed of it because I absolutely love the show and I'm really looking forward to seeing Mackie, the new companion.
Yes. You know, what do you think of her?
I think she's going to be great. Yeah. I will tell you that I had reservations when I found out it was going to be another girl before I saw her.
Mm.
Before another girl because I just thought, oh, see, now is the time to do a Jamie, just to do a Highlander, just to do... Yeah. You've got an older Doctor, a la Troughton, a la Hartnell. Give him a Ben. Give him a Jamie. Give him a guy that's not from current modern times. And just seeing what that dynamic's like, because we are so caught up in the older Time Lord, younger girl thing.
Right.
And I'm kind of a bit like, if they look young as an audience, we kind of go, we're okay with that. I'm not saying anything against Capaldi because he took Jenna, like he took Jenna Coleman from Matt. But so I think that, you know, I just thought, oh, maybe there's room here to sort of buck the trend a little bit. But then I just read an article today in The Guardian about Stephen Moffat saying about, you know, they were so close before Capaldi the casting a black actor.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And also, you know, how amazing would it be to have a black doctor and a black companion?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it would be amazing, but also I think we're missing the point because it shouldn't be amazing. Do you know what I mean? We're in 2016, for crying out loud. We shouldn't be talking about this anymore. You know, it should just be a given. It shouldn't be like the fact that he's black. It should just be like he was the best actor for the job, you know? And wouldn't it be great if there was two black leads on BBC Two, on BBC's flagship show? It's like, well, no, it just wouldn't it be great if they were the best actors for the job?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to start concerning about. But yeah,
that's
back
a
to your
good
question.
Way of putting it, though. It's also you know, the whole like Harry Potter play that's going on in Hermione.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like,
exactly.
Oh, you know, who cares?
No, did you see the photos of her?
Yes.
Doesn't she look
so
incredible?
Amazing. So
like,
good.
And you just for some reason, you not once do you look at that and think of the book, or not once do you think of that and you think of Emma Watson.
No, of course.
And you look at it and you see
Hermione.
You see a family and you think, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense in my brain. So I think we're past that now, and I think it might take something like a show like Doctor Who or the Harry Potter, the Cursed Child play to start twisting people's viewpoints of this topic, you know. But I mean, Doctor Who is back to your question. I'm always hyping about Doctor Who. I'm the hype master.
Yeah.
I'm the hype. Hang on. I'm the hype lord.
Oh, there you go.
Oh yeah,
very
you can
funny.
Stick that in your podcast. Oh god, this is so going to come back and haunt me, isn't it?
I know, especially because you were so excited about it.
brilliant.
I love it though. It's
no
great.
Good. But yeah, that, there you go. That's the answer to your question.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
It's been so much fun. I'm so glad you were able to come on here, and I'm so glad we can release this in audio form because I think people are really going to enjoy it.
Great. When do you know? Can you tell me when it's going to be out?
As soon as I get it edited, so hopefully today or tomorrow.
Wowza, you were fast.
I know. That's what I do.
That's what you do. Great, yep. Honestly. No, and I just want to say as well, thank you for all of the goodness, the previous past stuff that we've done together. I mean, they've always turned out to be really good. Like the stuff you did on the Kickstarter back in, two, 3 years ago when I was in the middle of doing Macbeth was really helpful to sort of generate press. So I've always got time for you and for Hypeball, always.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. It's been great. It's been good. I'm so glad we can can keep it up and we can hopefully help spread the word a little bit about Versailles, because I think it's worth spreading the word about too.
Yeah, I think so. I think this positivity thing is you know, we went on BBC Breakfast in the morning with George, and you know, we were hoping it's on the BBC, so then they're not going to ask us about the racy questions. And you know, first thing they did was like, so this has caused a bit of controversy, and you're like, can we just get off this now? Because you know, it's old news. It's yesterday's, you know, it's yesterday's fish pit. You know, it's yesterday's newspaper. It's rubbish. You know, and just want people now to start just enjoying the show.
Yes, you know, just know that it has a lot more to offer.
The offer, 100%, you know, and that's why we're so passionate about it, and that's why we want to do things like this, is because we want to start spreading positivity, baby.
Well, that's great.
Let me know when it comes up, and I'll look forward to it.
Okay, great. Well, have a great day, and have a great shoot and holiday when you get that far.
Yes, thank you, and stay safe, keep busy, and I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Cheers, Selena. Bye, bye.
You guys, wasn't that great? I just want to remind you at the end of the show here of our contact information. If you listened to this podcast and you thought, hey, that was kind of fun, then maybe you want to check out some of the other podcast episodes that we've done of interest to Merlin fans. Might be our exclusive interview with Bradley James, a little sit down between Bradley and our host, Pam. We also do weekly shows about regular entertainment news, and we do specials about TV shows and movies we like on hypable.com, which is hypable.com. You can find all the information about this podcast and all the other podcasts we do. We also have a Twitter account at hypablehype. We have a Tumblr, hypepodcast.tumblr.com, as well as an email address, which is hype@hypable.com. So if you want to get in contact with us about this show, about anything else we do, any suggestions you have for future stuff that we can cover, let us know in any of those ways. My name is Selena. I was so happy to have Alex join us. Please watch Versailles if you haven't yet. Hopefully you're convinced now that it's really worth your time. You can catch that on BBC Two on Wednesday nights. Thanks for listening, and have a great week, everyone.